cutting it again.
I was going to say, Matt, this is how you feel every time we do a Star Wars episode, but then I'm like, no, actually, you're more versed in the Star Wars universe than I am. Yeah. So it's, yeah.
There are very few universes that I'm not reasonably au fait with.
It's just normal films.
I don't understand all standalone films. But if there's a universe that you can get incredibly nerdy about, I did my very best as a child to make sure that I knew all the background. I don't have a fucking clue what happened in Lord of the Rings, but I had a Tolkien bestiary, and I knew how all the races came into existence.
I imagine you must feel how I feel whenever Strike does a comic book episode. I've not seen any of these movies or any of these books. I think I had one line in the episode where they talked about Deadpool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, Actually, the Marvel... I'm pretty well versed in. But
he's wearing a Guardians of the Galaxy t-shirt.
Yeah. Oh god.
Right. Episode. So this film, what was it called?
Uncovered Empire.
: Beyond the Lightning Dome.
Beyond the Lightning Dome.
So that was such a success, obviously, because it was better than Beyond, and every other Star Trek ever. Because it had Mad Max, and everyone's like, everyone's ready for another Mad Max, and we're going to get there just ahead of Fury Road 2 or whatever it is, right? Yeah. We're just going to come out just before them, steal their lightning.
Fury Road.
Steal their lightning, and then we'll sort of...
Angry Junctions.
So yeah, we're going to be a smash hit at the box office, and it's going to spawn a series.
Yeah.
So this film... will have been the pilot for this next series. So this crew are now going off into the distance, having, I don't know, for some reason not forgotten what happened, because obviously if you remember the lore at the end of the film, what happened was we said that when they killed Roger Allam...
Lore wasn't at the end of the film.
No, lore wasn't.
That's brilliant for a character you just heard of today.
Yay! And we can in stasis.
And we can leave that in because this is deleted scenes. if you remember what happened at the end of the film, when they killed Roger Allam, everything reverted to before they got the grandfather paradox, and everyone should have forgotten, but they didn't.
With one exception. Part of Belvoir made it back.
Yeah. He's the recurring villain.
And because that's still there, the memory of only the Enterprise crew stayed. Yeah. They remember what happened, but no one else does.
He's the recurring villain in the way that, like, every person who they come up against is just him.
Belvoir, but in...
And at the end, when the person dies or disappears or whatever, there's an after credit scene where he's just floating out of them.
Well, you gotta remember that not every episode of Star Trek has a bad guy.
Yes.
No.
Like, sometimes it's just there was a misunderstanding. Ooh. And like that bit where Wesley Crusher's gonna get put to death and everyone's like, kill him. You're gonna get put to death for the best reason, which is falling over a fence into a garden.
Greenhouse.
Smashing a greenhouse, and he's gonna get put to death in this utopian world.
I have many questions.
Yeah, go on. We can answer them.
Greenhouse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in someone's back. Right. It sounds like.
Yeah. No, go on, ask more questions.
He sounds like they're fence hopping.
Don't fill him in. Like, okay, so, greenhouse, yeah. It was a forbidden greenhouse. He's not allowed to go there. Next question.
Yeah, and they were going to inject him with lethal injection.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Next question.
What were the things, right,
yeah,
that led him to be in the greenhouse?
Game of catch.
In an air infection.
Follicking. Follicking with a ball.
Game of catch, yeah. Next.
Where was this?
On a planet. Oh, was it?
Can't remember the name of the planet.
Fuck it. There's lots of sexy people, though.
Random planet with lots of blondes.
Lots of sexies.
Okay, yeah. Right. So, what was he doing down there?
Having fun?
Yeah.
Like, everyone was down there. They were all just chatting and hanging out.
Leave, I think.
And then, it was just sort of like, here's a real cool bunch of guys. And also, Wesley's playing with the ball and then didn't know that there's a forbidden greenhouse that you're not allowed to smash through.
Who threw the ball?
Some fucker.
Yeah, some other kid.
I thought it was like an OP Worf just hurling.
Yeah, how many questions defines many? Because I know the bit you're
more
doing.
Than
that. like 7.
You're worse than Theo. 10 reasons I hate Rogue One. Do it. Yeah. 10 reasons.
All right, question number 3, 4? I don't know where are we.
No, this is question number 6. I was counting because I knew what you were fucking doing.
I just wanted to hear what happens when you try to figure out the truth by us not telling you the story in order. You just only answering the questions you ask.
who is Wesley Crusher?
He's a little shit who won't get up the bridge.
Dr. Crusher's son.
Yeah, Dr. Beverly Crusher's son, who is an ensign for a lot of it.
Acting ensign.
Yeah, acting ensign. Wesley Crusher until he goes through.
He goes to the academy.
Yeah.
Of course, and then, before that, he just wears all those daft pullovers.
Yeah, he just wears a jumper all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a kid on the Enterprise, usually.
What episode is it in?
I'm almost certain it's a series 1.
Yeah.
It feels very series 1.
Maybe 2.
Because I don't remember Tasha Yar being in it. So it's probably series 2.
Oh, no, but no, because I think she might have been in it because she might have been like quite resistant to the whole like sexy massage thing.
Wesley Crusher in series 1?
Yeah, yes. He's in the first episode.
Cool.
Yeah.
He's in Encounter at Farpoint being a shit. Like the rest of it.
So anyway, right, we're going back. we're pitching episodes from the newly revived series of Star Trek
Tempest.
Yes,
has to be Star because they're always named after the ship.
Yeah,
and it was a pretty good. Like I think Tempest pretty good because it was like there were beats of Lost in Space in there. And yeah. I'm talking about the 1998. Yeah.
Oh, it's getting rebooted, you know?
Matt LeBlanc.
Matt LeBlanc.
Heather Graham.
I fucking called the reboot of Lost in Space, didn't I?
Yeah,
I bet they're going to reboot Lost in Space in the next few years. And then Netflix announced it. I was like yes!
not even two weeks later.
Yeah. It was incredible.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But, so I've got some episode names here, episode titles.
Episode 1.
Episode 1, from Connell Lavelle, we've got Set Phasers to Gun.
So this is centres around Karen Gillan, the dangerous librarian, if you forgot since earlier this week.
That's her name in the film.
Karen Gillan, dangerous librarian. So, and this is all about like her being too deadly with a diplomatic situation. Like, they go down onto a planet where... Everyone, it's like an anti-gun, it's a gun control one, right? Where everyone is constantly carrying, like...
A phaser.
Incredibly powerful weapons. And the point
where it's got ridiculous and there's people, like, dragging mortars around.
And it's like an arms race is going on this planet. Yeah. A whole arms race is going on this planet between everyone. And they go down and... the Enterprise has had explicit instructions that because it's a diplomatic mission, because they need to support the disarmament, they have to not go down with any offensive weaponry because it will be taken as a threat and
they can
be
take
shot.
Melvar, though.
They can take Melvar.
Doesn't count.
But, they... And to stop the arms race getting too bad on this planet, they've said no... phaser or laser weaponry.
Okay.
So they all have ballistic weapons. So, like, the Enterprise can't take anything, any of their offensive weaponry down with them.
See, I was going to suggest something similar that was kind of, so there's just full energy weapons.
Yeah.
And to stop the arms race... just the Tempest just detonates like a massive EMP that just wipes out all of the energy weapons.
It's phases to gun.
Yeah, I'm getting that. Okay. I'm getting that. Which also traps the away team on the surface, on which Karen Gillan, who then has to make, like the episode with the Gorn, has to make guns and start a new arms race.
With guns. Yes. So they fire up a photon torpedo into the upper atmosphere. It creates an electromagnetic pulse, wipes out all the phasers, disrupts the atmosphere, sci-fi crazy
mumbo jumbo.
Mumbo jumbo can't teleport the crew back up.
Yeah. At which point, like Melvar starts to shut down, and that's when they have a ticking timer. Right?
Oh yes, yes.
Melvar's dying because he's a if you don't remember from earlier this week, he's a gas being.
Energy gas.
Who works?
As a tactical officer.
That's why he's gone down there with Karen Gillan. Yeah.
And then it's Karen Gillan, the dangerous librarian, with her knowledge of historic weaponry.
Mm. She's science officer, because we didn't have a science officer in the thing.
She was first officer,
isn't she? Yeah, but also science.
And because they've got this random hobby each.
Yeah.
Kind of like cards that they get dealt at the start of the series.
The ship's in bottles for some reason.
Yeah. They're three-dimensional characters. They've got
a cat
hobby.
At one point.
Jazz and Cajun cooking.
That's Cisco.
Baseball also Cisco.
Sexy virtual reality wrestling is Worf's, I think.
That's Reginald Barkley.
Commander Broccoli. Lieutenant, what was he?
Barkley.
They called him Broccoli though.
Oh,
yeah, because Wesley calls him Broccoli, and then Picard overhears him. And at the end of the film, it's that moment where in a sitcom everyone would throw their heads back and laugh because he goes, "As you were, Broccoli," and he's like, "Oop." And then there's like a freeze frame as everyone goes, "Oops, he called him the wrong name," and then it's stupid.
Oh, making light of the one character in Star Trek with serious mental health problems.
Star Trek is weird.
It's great. That's what I love about it. Like, not the making fun of people with mental health issues, but like the fact that they do an episode about that.
So, it's sort of an allegory for gun control.
Yep.
And does Karen Gillan's character learn at the end that guns are a bad thing?
Yeah, no, she
Ed's shaking his head
She's arming herself, like, because she gets trapped in what was, like, she falls through a hole in the floor and comes to an armory, and she's putting these guns back in action, right? And then...
Meanwhile, everyone on the surface, because none of their weapons work anymore, they just go to knives.
Yeah, well, then someone has to talk them down. Zooey Deschanel, a Romulan, is the only person left who's wrestling with her warlike nature, is wrestling with herself and actually manages to talk them down out of going into a knife fight.
And then Karen Gillan comes out,
and then that's the point at which they manage to get the transporter back online and pull them out of there.
Yeah. And she just put the guns down a step away from them. Just beamed up, and the guns are still on the floor. Final shot is just this mad scrabble for these guns.
And they did nothing.
That's the last thing we see.
They did nothing to help the planet whatsoever.
As the ship flies away.
They think they've helped.
That was a pre-warp civilization.
Captain's log.
Guest director Robert Rodriguez.
Captain's log. I think we bloody sorted it.
Chalk that one up for the good guys.
No fucking worries.
That should be the thing. They always leave the place worse.
or exactly the same. It's like they do a bunch of shows, just like, and then the captain's log at the end is always captain's logs, stardate 346 and something else. I think we bloody sorted it. Fucking bonza. No worries. All right, on to the next place.
But they come along like a Tempest. Just wreck up the place.
Fuck it, right? And then you just cut down to over people shooting each other to death. You've just got this captain's log playing.
You just see nukes going off all across the planet as they leave.
We didn't have time to stop and figure out and hang out with the locals in their new peacetime, but you know, fuck it, right? And then you just boom in the background as they warp into, you know.
We got something done.
There you go.
It's the catchphrase. We got something done. It's his teleport, like, as he's phoning up, like, the Admiral. It's like, what have you done, Captain Weaving? We did something. Can't really tell what it is.
I think the bonds are no worries.
I mean, we went down and there was a couple of options. So what we did, we explored them all detail and just talked them out. And we left them. We left him in possession of a single bullet.
H.
Recent scans have proved that there's no life left on that, but even the plant life.
He's doing his captain's log to send to the Admiralty, and he's like, and we left him with a position of a single bullet as a show of their disarmament. End of captain's log. H. So yeah, next one.
Okay,
I think Bonds Are No Worries has to be Captain Williams. Like closing.
No worries.
No worries, mate.
No dramas.
Okay, so from Stephen Thomas we've got The Darkest Corners.
Ooh. Man, this is a toughie.
Okay, so The Tempest crosses over with the Mirror Universe.
Yes.
So what? Explain to me what the Mirror Universe is.
So the Mirror Universe is the exact opposite where everyone has a goatee and everybody is either evil or good.
Yeah, everybody is
depending
evil.
On the starting position.
It's the Terran Empire, which is a fascist...
Totalitarian,
ruled by a brutal emperor, and you rise through the ranks basically by killing your superiors. So everybody is constantly on guard for a knife in their back.
So it's North Korea.
Is this the other Enterprise episode where there's like...
First episode was Mirror Mirror.
Oh, no, okay. Yeah, I was thinking of a different one where one comes in like at the point where the ship was supposed to be destroyed. Everyone thought the ship had been destroyed, but it came through.
You're thinking of Yesterday's Enterprise.
That's the one, Yesterday's Enterprise. Not that one, then.
No, that's...
Because they did look a bit more warlike, but that's because they had been at war for the past...
The way you describe this,
yeah.
It sounds like the Necromungers from Chronicles of Riddick.
Not seen that film.
Oh, my God.
But let's go with it. Okay, so what was the title again?
It was The Darkest Corners.
Okay, so... Because the Mirror Universe is usually arrived at by means of a transporter accident.
Or, if you've been watching Discovery, via the mycelial network.
Well, so, yeah. And it's usually the Prime Universe going into the Mirror Universe as a rule. So this one... is a war party from the Mirror Universe into the Prime.
Yes.
So you've got just this massive war party just invading the Federation, made up of everyone that's in the Federation.
I was thinking it would just be the ISS Tempest gets brought in, the Mirror Universe Tempest.
Nice. No, actually, I prefer that. Yeah, do that.
Yeah.
And they're just getting
I believe it's USS.
No, ISS.
Oh my God, I thought I had him!
ISS is Mirror Universe.
Right.
For people listening, Tom is curling into the fetal position on his bed at the moment.
So they, of course, I mean, this might be, I might not have seen the Mirror Mirror episode, but I imagine that the only thing you can do is go through to the Mirror Universe and find the worst person you can think of in the darkest corners of the universe to come and help them fight the best people in the Mirror Universe.
That's what happened in Discovery.
Yeah.
It's Belvoir that's opened it up this time.
Oh, he's a dick, isn't he?
He's fucking doing it, that bloody gas bastard.
Yeah.
He's pulled through the ISS Tempest.
It's still Roger Allen.
Fucking gas.
Remarkably, though, the ISS Tempest crew are just really efficient and competent.
Yeah, they're actually really good.
They make stuff better.
Whenever they leave a planet, they've left it better off, which is not what they're supposed to be doing. Yeah.
They all have goatees, they all have really frowny faces and really warlike like accoutrement, but when they get there, they get the job done and things come off better. They are the kind of like necessary evil to make things better. The Tempest, the USS Tempest, is the damage for damage's sake.
And I think this is an episode centered on Melvar and Belvar, because Melvar could probably take control of the captain of the Mirror One.
So yeah, the Mirror Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, and start to just disrupt.
Mirror Hugo Weaving is played by Brendan Fraser with no explanation.
everyone else is exactly the same. just Brendan Fraser. I think, yeah. So Melvar has taken control,
and he's brought them to kind of invade and destroy the Tempest to kind of to replace the Tempest. And because it's the Mirror Tempest, they are remarkably efficient. I think the Prime Tempest only kind of survives through just like a complete fluke.
A total luck.
But the Federation's like, we like the new ones better.
Can't have any of that.
Can't have any of that.
Can't have any of that. Shard, come on.
Yeah, because they
shoot him down.
It was the science officer again.
Karen Gillan.
For some reason, decides that the safest place to hide is in the middle of a black hole. Or the darkest corner.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, okay, can I do a quick rewrite here? Yeah. It wasn't Belvoir brought them through. They just came through by fluke. The Federation starts going, these guys are much better at your job than you are. Yep. And then the USS Tempest then has to go and find Belvoir to come and destroy the ISS Tempest because they're going to do their job better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is amazing.
They've got to go find their arch enemy to say, like, listen, do you want someone who does our job better? No, you don't. Go get them.
Do you want someone who can save the day? No.
In which case, this is where they are. Go and get them.
That could be the overarching thing of the villain, though. It could be like, he's the one who set the Tempest on the journey to just disrupt the universe.
Yeah, it's like the devil you know, right? Yeah. He starts off as their archenemy, and over the course of the series, he becomes kind of a frenemy.
Yeah.
And like Q.
Yeah.
And speaking of frenemies like Q, from Ross _ Originals, we've got Q the Music.
Oh, we get Joss Whedon in for this one.
Yes. Did they ever do a musical episode?
No.
I don't think they did.
Nope. But this...
Well, guess what?
This is where Q takes them to a realm that is entirely based on the golden age of cinema.
There's...
Okay, so is this not just a mishap in a holodeck?
I do have, that would be the thing.
That would be the easiest.
I mean, there's Minuet, that whole thing with the
Riker's trombone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course you've got Riker's trombone.
Typical to get away from Riker's trombone.
Harry Kim's flute.
Baronet.
Yeah, that's a trope that we've not picked up on. Fucking random performances on the Enterprise Next Gen. There's so many, like concerts.
Everyone
and
has
learning readings.
Everyone's learning an instrument or learning to paint or writing something.
The Federation's
or
enrichment
program
is woefully underfunded.
From a play.
Well, yeah, no, that happens in this episode.
Yeah.
Q can. Thingy things.
He's just a walking Deus Ex Machina.
You know what, Tom? You're definitely right. Q can thingy things.
Yes.
Yeah. He snap his fingers and things happen.
Everything. Yeah.
So basically,
happens.
He turns the Tempest into La La Land. Q in this series, played by Ryan Gosling.
So Ryan Gosling turns up. Hello there, guys. He says, hey, Captain... What's his name?
Weaving.
Hey there, Captain Weaving. Do you know that there's a Klingon war fleet that's been terrorizing some local planets over there? And then Captain Weaving's like, I know you. You're bloody Q, aren't you? Ah, you piece of shit. Nah, you're not going to get me this time. No. And he says, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do fucking nothing.
Completely in keeping with the character.
We're gonna have a fucking recital. We had it planned anyway, so don't say that this was anything to do with you, Q. All right, but I'll tell you what, you're not leading me down a road. Fucking Avenue Q, no. We're going to have a fucking musical sensation on the holodeck. We're going to have a recital. There's nothing you can fucking do about it. And Q's like, oh, is that so?
If that's then... music you want, it's music you'll get. Clicks his fingers.
And the whole just keeps clicking to the beat.
5, 6, 7, 8. Da, da, da. Da, 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 da.
I'm thinking this is one where we like you mentioned Avenue Q, and this is where
no,
I think
throw away reference,
no,
Tom.
Don't do it, Tom.
This is where we throw all the quirks of the, like, we get it all over with one episode.
Nah, no,
they're all puppets.
No. Star Trek survives on this shit.
They're all puppets. They're all singing or dancing. It's a bottle episode. There's, what else is there?
Holodeck going wrong episode, which it already wrong. Is.
Yeah. There's paintball. There's, what else did Community have?
A D&D episode.
There's a D&D episode. There's.
I love how your idea of novelty episode is only drawn from Community.
Because they did it, yeah. And half the episode is just too many cooks. Go YouTube it.
Don't great. You'll regret it, and I'm not lying. Like, if you haven't seen Too Many Cooks, thank your lucky fucking stars. Just
too many
you'll
cooks,
no
too
no many you'll regret cooks. It. You're gonna regret
too many
it. You're gonna
cooks,
regret
too many.
Don't click
cooks,
that link. Don't
too many cooks,
type it.
Too
don't type it in the YouTube search bar. Don't you stop it. Stop. No. Don't press that button. I see those suggested links, and I know. Stop. Jeremy, stop it!
From Mike Cello, we've got the trouble with continuity. Consistency is futile.
That should have been very clever.
So it has to be a Borg episode.
Has to be a Borg episode.
But it's the Borg are like,
and it's a mashup. So you've got Lore, Data's brother that took over the Borg, the Borg Queen, Locutus, vying for power. It's a Borg power struggle.
In fact, the Tempest doesn't feature in this one at all.
No,
they're like
it
I
does.
No. At the start, it's like it's Captain's log. We're just kind of hanging out and drinking, but I wonder what we were in my ready room the other day, and we asked the question. What the fuck do you think it's like being on a Borg ship?
it's like the Rick Lantis, Rick and Morty episode. Yeah, yeah. So we're off to Atlantis. So they're off to do something actually genuinely really cool, and then we just and meanwhile in the Delta Quadrant,
kind of just pans sideways.
Right. Being as it's about continuity, it's Hugo Weaving played by Brendan Fraser.
Yeah,
just without any explanation.
We
again.
Just want to keep them in work.
I'm really hoping that Brendan Fraser after that interview, I'm really hoping that Brendan Fraser's in more stuff now.
I think he's got a few projects coming up.
That's good. Because we haven't seen him in ages.
On his IMDb page.
Yeah. You're looking forward to it.
Check often. Is that your homepage?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember the last time I looked at it, actually. It was a few weeks ago. Which is weird. It's
like,
not,
also,
I was like,
also,
that's not a thing normal people
what's
do.
What's a homepage? Because, I'll be honest, I can't remember the last time I didn't just leave a fucking load of tabs open.
Yeah,
I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
I just leave it as is, and when I open it, it's where I was in the middle of listening to fucking Regulators.
There's too many children in my house for me to do that.
I might set my homepage to Brendan Fraser's IMDb page.
That'd be pretty cool.
It won't be.
No,
it's not cool at all. Like, it's just the fact that I'll have to point it out to people as well. Like, just don't get any actual use.
Look at this shit.
Look at how it's a movie. I am.
Just watch this, right? I open Safari, boom!
This is exactly
where I want to be. Has he got any films going up? No.
So yeah, just some shit with the Borg. Next.
Yeah. Okay. So this one from Toby Reynolds, we've got Boldly Going Somewhere.
oh, this is perfect for our crew. we're going somewhere, right?
We got no mission orders.
They get lost.
The navigational computer's on the fritz again.
Fuck it. Third star to the right and straight on till morning. Just fucking misquoting.
And then someone points out, like, Captain, there is no real left or right in space.
Fucking that way, then. I don't know where.
Where I'm pointing.
Spills lager in the direction of where I'm pointing.
It's like a can of fossils.
Over there.
Worse 4X.
Want to go to that star over there? That one.
Looks kind of shiny.
Yeah, it's
is
sparkling.
Is it me, or is Captain Weaving basically fucking Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean?
Oh, please, no.
I think it's a holodeck episode.
Why is the Fosters always gone? shit.
So I reckon there's like a memory reformat. They're defragmenting the holodeck. And so there, but like Captain Weaving kind of forgets this. Like someone tells him, but he's like drunk. Yeah. So but it's like Synthahol. So he gets up and he's like, "Fuck it, oh, so I feel fine." Synthahol, guys, is an alcohol that they create out of the fabricators on the Enterprise, where it's kind of alcohol that doesn't give you any hangover.
Yeah, and also if you kind of think about it, you stop being drunk. You can easily dismiss its intoxicating effects.
Mm. Wow, I didn't know that part. That's pretty cool.
Romulan ale is illegal.
Yes, it is.
That's because it's not Synthahol.
Bright green. Actually, after DS9, it no longer is.
They declassify it.
Well, because the Romulans joined the war, and so the trade embargo gets lifted.
Is that why?
Yeah, it wasn't like... wasn't banned because it was so intoxicating.
Cause
Klingon just because fuck Romulans.
Yeah, fair.
And also, remember that time that they take all the Amish on? Those Irish Amish people on into the cargo bay. And they just make some fucking whiskey.
There's also the time where the three people from the 1980s from the get frozen and they get found floating in space somewhere. And one of them's just like business guy, 80s business guy.
It's one of them, Annie Lennox.
Hey, see?
Wow.
He's like, this call back.
Bring it right back.
call back to 3 hours ago.
The episode, the business guy's just like, say, how can I wangle my way to talk to the captain? I got a bit of dosh. I'll sell you this chair from inside my room. And they're like, no, there's no money here. And that's our chair. And the captain doesn't want to speak to you. And he's like using the intercom like, say! Like talking to the bridge like, hey, how do I get a drink around here?
No, that's the other guy, the country music singer guy.
Oh yeah.
And he goes to Dr. Crusher to go and get drugs. And it's like, oh, you see, I need something to get up in the morning. I need something to help me go to sleep at night.
So
are they defragging the holodecks?
Yes.
And they basically just got to have someone just to go through and delete all the porn. And Captain fucking Weaving is furious.
Well, the thing is, yeah, Captain Weaving remembers that this is going on, finally clocks what's actually happening. They're deleting all the holodeck porn. And he runs into the holodeck like, stop, you fucking idiots! And then he's in the middle of the holodeck while it's defragging.
I'm thinking,
which sends him on a wild ride through different holodeck bits.
This is a B plot,
right?
Because he's not on the bridge,
right?
So Karen Gillan's in charge.
No. Karen Gillan is also annoyed about the porn. She's there. Third in charge is the monkey.
I keep saying this. The monkey is the most competent crew member on staff.
However,
he's the only
he can't communicate with anyone, so he's
except
in the captain's
RuPaul.
Chair. Yeah, except RuPaul, and he's in the captain's chair, and he's going. man is just messing around with all the controls and stuff.
And then he just skips to, like, a view of the outside of the ship, and the ship just, like, spinning.
No, no, again, he's super competent. Yeah. So what happens is, like, everyone's like, whoa, what the fuck, we've gone into warp 8. Shit. Like, the engine's performing better than it ever was. It's like they were driving the fucking, the Tempest, the USS Tempest with a handbrake on. But the monkey's just, like, taking that off because he knows how to do it, and then they're going into warp 12 and it's fine.
So,
and then they get to a planet, and this is like a part of the B plot. It's just a little joke, is where they basically just go like, where the fuck are we? and then they're like next to a planet. It's like, oh, we're next to the planet. Aren't we scheduled to solve a mystery there in 2 weeks? And he goes, oh, I'm hearing, I'm getting, and who's the comms officer again?
The comms officer is...
It's the Romulan.
Someone says, where the fuck are we? I guess it's Captain Weaving. And he goes, sir, it seems like our appointment in 2 weeks is, the mystery's been solved. Something about a monkey sending them a message.
That's the end of the episode. The bulk of the episode is the B-plot of Karen Gillan and Hugo Weaving trying to stop the porn deletion.
Yeah. But it's like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. They're like, stuff is just like, they're in holodeck simulations, and then they're just jumping to a sudden other one. Exactly. So they're like in a combat simulation in the forest, and then they're like in the middle of fighting, and then suddenly, and they're in an orgy, and then like...
Andorian Gigolo 4.
But like, it's like, because they're off having their own little adventure on one side of the ship.
Yep.
The rest of the crew are in the ready room discussing where they might be going while the monkey is in the bridge just controlling everything.
And they're in the middle of this big discussion in that room, in the kind of like council room where they're all got that big long table with all the chairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're in that room having this huge discussion, and every now and again they all just like get thrown back in their chairs as they go to warp again.
It's happening again. I've wiped off most of the whiteboard.
They just get 3 months worth of shit done in the space of a day.
The whiteboard has just got a load of different sized question marks written in.
and like half finished words, because they get like a little bit through where they are, and then suddenly they go back to they go to warp, and then suddenly they just get like straight line up the end of that sentence, and then they have to start again.
Everyone's got bruises. Yeah, that's boldly going somewhere.
So, oh, that one.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, that was
We never resolved it. Did they save the holodeck porn?
I feel they got to the end and it all got deleted, and they had to reshoot a load of their own.
They saved some of it, but unfortunately they saved it in such a way as it just randomly infiltrates other programs.
It's a two-parter. Second episode is them doing that.
Oh, hi, sexy Karen Gillan librarian. All my porn's gone. Fancy shooting some with me now.
There's got to be a title in this list somewhere. That's the second episode to this bit.
Second part. Oh, corrupted data.
Corrupted? No, I've seen Holodeck Repairman. Yeah.
I'd like to repair the holodeck.
They only have one set. It's an empty holodeck.
With my big wrench.
Oh, my holodeck pipes need a good clean.
Make them go.
Oh god, yeah. So yeah, that was.
I'll have a look at that with my hypo spanner.
Was that a Star Wars reference?
No, Star Trek. You're gonna find hypo spanners in Star Trek.
All right, because they've got one in Empire Strikes Back as well.
Yeah.
Oh, is it hydro spanner? I can't remember.
Why is it a water spanner?
Hydraulic. Why is it Star Wars?
It's a hydraulic spanner.
Yeah. But yeah, that was. I'm assuming we're not getting renewed for a mid-season thing.
Take it to Amazon Prime. We'll give it $100 million.
5 episodes in, this show got cancelled. It was about the time when the captain really wanted to get his porn back. Paramount were just like, probably not.
Do you know what we have just pitched all the way through this? Is that new one with Seth MacFarlane?
Orville.
Yeah. To be honest, I'd rather watch this.
Yeah.
To be honest.
The Orville, I saw Frank watch the Orville, it was depressing. It was like Tom trying to pitch Star Trek.
Star Trek gags.
Like, yeah. Gags about Star Trek, yeah, from the perspective of someone who isn't that into Star Trek.
That didn't really know about it, yeah.
Just kind of knows the tropes from reading a Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Like that, or just the sort of, like, has seen that. Not that this is Tom now, I'm going a little bit further. But, like, Seth MacFarlane, it's more like he's seen that thing that's like, there's playing as on the Star Red Bow. He'd seen the general pop culture around Star Trek, yeah, and he's like, I'll give it a shot, you know.
Okay, yeah, just give me 50 million.
If you want a really funny Star Trek parody, Hyperdrive. It's fucking brilliant.
No, there's a wonderful one that was written by a bunch of Finnish guys. It's called Star Trek in the Perkinning. I can highly recommend it. It's a Star Trek Babylon 5 matchup, and it is beautiful.
So it's DS9 then.
It's amazing.
Yeah, Hyperdrive is Nick Frost and Kevin Eldon.
Yes.
And
Miranda Hart.
Miranda Hart. Mm. And it is brill. It should have had more than two seasons.
Yes.
Did not get it.
Kill the humans. Destroy the culture.
It's like a new Red Dwarf, basically.
My brother was like, what the fuck is that? And it's the bootleg C-3PO doll.
Oh yeah, C-3.
C-3 from Star War.
That's awesome.
It's like one of my favourite things, bootleg Star Wars
Theo,
stuff.
Theo got it, you, right?
Yeah.
They're really good with presents.
Oh god.
Star Wars, and then what were the others? Like little girl was young Anakin Skywalker.
and there was a model of Darth Maul just called Dennis. That's my favourite one.
Just Dennis.
Just the fact that, like, he does get named in the film, but if he didn't, and like some kid saw that thing, it was like, oh yeah, no, that's Dennis. Yeah.
Dennis.
Black and red, he's Dennis the Menace.
That must be where it comes from. Like, where else would it appear from?
Dennis! Nasher! Don't forget Nipper!
Dennis is dad! Dennis is mom!
Watch out! Walter!
Did you hear, like, I think there was a fan letter to the Beano once written about what are the name, like, this kid wrote in and was like, what are Dennis's mum and dad's real names? And the Beano wrote back with, well, Dennis's dad is his real name. He just got married to a lady called Dennis's mum. That's the most passive aggressive. Like, they've gone out of their way to be.
There's real effort gone into that.
Yeah. You could say you were allowed to make that up on the spot, but they did not.
Yeah.
They actively chose not to make that up on the spot.
They could have just come up with any names. Yeah, and it would have been fine. But no, they went out of their way to be like, that was a dumb question, kid. So Star Trek, film-wise,
yeah.
What's going on there, guys?
What is going on there? Well, the key with Star Trek film-wise is you only see them usually. You in the past have only seen them with reference to the TV series, which has made them incredibly inaccessible. Because if you go and you're like, oh, I'm going to watch this new, excuse me. I'm going to watch this new Star Trek film. I've heard Star Trek's good from my friends, but I haven't really come across it at all. And you go to the cinema and you're like, who are these people? And what is going on? And usually they make some attempt to make you know what's going on, but they rarely do a good job of it if you haven't watched the TV series. But now they did the ones, right? The J.J. Abrams versions, where no one has to think about anything.
This is true. Favourite moment from the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie was when Sulu pulled out a fold-up samurai sword. I mean, that's great.
I mean, it's great if it was in a Transformers movie. I don't know. I love Star Trek Beyond. I think these films got better as they went along
No, they didn't.
Except for Into Darkness.
Is an objectively bad movie.
Yeah.
You know, that bit with fucking, was it Beastie Boys blur? And it's like, playing classical music.
That was the best bit in Star Trek films.
That wasn't in Into Darkness as well.
That was in Beyond.
That was in Beyond.
I fucking loved that bit.
And in the first one as well, because he's driving the car and it's Sabotage. And I was like, yes!
There is no way... Like, anyone can tell me that Star Trek Beyond is a departure from TOS when they do shit like that. Like, the amount of reference the original series makes to, 20th century culture is fucking beyond real. It's like 1965 is the most important year ever.
Yeah.
They did it in Voyager as well when 1995 was.
Oh, that two-parter.
So good.
Oh, God, with Sarah Silverman in it randomly.
Why is it always halfway through the decade? Because Back to the Future is 1985. And 1955 and 2015, it's always halfway through the decade that it's just like, yep. No, these are the most important times.
Because they're like, middle of the 90s.
Mid-60s.
Yeah.
Oh, so 1965.
Yeah. I think the whole Blasting Beastie Boys thing was quite appropriate with, I don't know, they were calling back to an earlier Star Wars, which I think then...
Wow.
They were calling back to an earlier Star Trek, which then I think begets calling back to earlier culture. And I think tying that into... Yeah, by the way, these are you. Like, things like Star Wars don't do that. There's no one... Even though it's a long time ago and a galaxy far, far away and all that stuff, there's no sort of, even... That is the only nod to this might be in your world, right? That and E.T.
E.T. is the connection between our world and the Star Wars universe. Yeah.
Whereas Star Trek, the Federation is based in San Francisco. Like, it's just... It's a real thing. It's a thing that people did in the future, and now we're there. And I think it would be a mistake to completely divorce it from humanity.
I'd love to see Star Wars with just music from the modern day,
like Suicide Squad. Just completely separate universe, completely separate tone. But we're just going to put some pop in there.
And again, Star Wars with music for the modern age, just Guardians of the Galaxy. But I just love the next Star Wars film to end with Gangster's Paradise playing over the credits.
But could be the Weird Al version though. It's just Amish Paradise. It'd be brilliant.
I think there's a difference though, because I don't think shawarma exists in Star Wars. Whereas I think, Guardians of the Galaxy is set in our world, but Marvel. Yeah. So, just our world, but superheroes are in it.
I was going to say, Jared, you had a good point about the Star Trek films being...
Yeah, they're a lot of the good, at least the good ones anyway, tend to be Star Trek does another movie thing. So, Wrath of Khan, which is often quoted as the best Star Trek movie, is... a battle of wits, Hunt for Red October, two captains, are slogging it out. Star Trek VI is a whodunit. First Contact is basically just Star Trek telling a Moby Dick. Star Trek 4 is a comedy, and I think the best Star Treks are where they're telling another story through kind of the Star Trek world.
Mm. And they're all even numbers.
Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, up until 9, it swapped over after 9 because 10 was also bad, and then after that, the odd-numbered ones were the good ones.
Yes. It's 1 and 3 from the new ones that are really good. Which is weird. Because, the evenly numbered ones are trying to copy the best ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nemesis and Into Darkness are just remakes of Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, with Star Wars and Star Trek, there is something going on that I fucking like, which is like rebooting without rebooting, which is basically like, hey, in the world that all the nerds who liked it like, something happens that makes everyone forget what happened. So like for instance, Star Trek, that's the Kelvin
incident. The
black hole
big old
thing.
What was it? Red matter.
The Errata being sent back in time by a red matter.
Yes. And we know the old world still exists and all that stuff, but
you can still have your TNG, your Voyager,
that can still all be going. That can still all be going on.
Yeah,
like all that happened in that universe is they fucking. I guess Romulus blew up. And then they lost a mining vessel. That's it.
And Spock, they lost Spock as well.
Oh yeah, they lost Spock, but he's gone anyway.
He died a few years later. It's fine.
Other than that, stuff can just keep going on. Nobody's going to miss Romulus that much.
And that was a fucking lot of red matter as well. To say it in such a small amount.
Yeah. He took a tiny bit of that red matter and made a giant black hole.
Yeah, it was like a meter-sized ball of it and he needed about a pea.
What is he doing?
So,
why would you manufacture that much?
So you're going to need a gun to kill this person, but I've given you a nuke.
No, I've given you just a warehouse full of guns.
And then Star Wars is doing this whole thing where it's like as of The Last Jedi, everyone just says forget the old stuff over and over again at the audience into the camera.
Let it die.
Out with the old, in with the new. Just stares at the camera saying, why do you remember that? Stop.
Stop having nostalgia, you shits.
See, and this is something that bugs me with as the Star Trek kind of timeline progresses. They keep rewriting history as they do it because history has now moved on. So it was originally set in like the 60s or made in the 60s. So they set a whole thing around kind of the timeline to get from the 60s to the 2300s or the 2200s at that point. It was like there was the Third World War, nuclear devastation.
There was a eugenics war as well, which had happened about 20 years ago by now.
Exactly, which gave us Khan.
Yeah,
I love Space Seed for that. Yeah. It's like the eugenics war of the 1990s. Oh yeah, I remember that.
You know what? No, it was the Eurythmics war.
It was all a sweet dream.
We had to launch Annie Lennox into space.
You just got a few of the letters wrong.
300 years time, they'll defrost Annie Lennox. And she'll kill Kirk.
It's fine, we can use her blood to bring him back to life. God, that was a stupid plot point.
Oh god, I want to see a remake of Wrath of Khan, but it's just Annie Lennox.
He tasks me and I shall have him.
It's just Annie Lennox. Oh wow. But yeah, going back to the point, I think Star Trek films are at the best where it's just these characters in a genre film, rather than them just making it, because
the
bad ones feel like extended episodes.
Yeah,
that's true. Every surviving series of films,
Beyond, which feel like an extended episode.
Yeah, like an extended episode, but it's a welcome extended episode rather than
I think that's mainly because we haven't had an episode. We haven't had an episode in that world, like at all.
That's fair.
Like, Into Darkness is, like, fundamental shake-up of the underlying power structure of the Federation.
Yeah, I mean, massive spaceship gets plowed into San Francisco.
Yeah, Star Trek 1, bigger a fundamental unravelling of the
Vulcan's
time.
Gone. Yeah, exactly. Vulcan's gone.
Yeah,
didn't
exactly.
Need that.
The universe and time are all fundamentally shaken up. We needed an episode of Star Trek. One of them just needs to not be world building, but it was. It was the best world building they've done. They didn't need to blow up a planet. They didn't need to like fundamentally take a cross-eyed like kind of look at why they were doing what they were doing or that sort of thing. They did it in the space of an episode. It was just a long episode. Like Beyond basically does a regular episode, and in doing so questions the fundamental rightness or wrongness of the Federation's philosophy, like questions the ability of the Enterprise's crew to kind of to fulfill that when apart from its underlying power structure, and also sets the best location in a Star Trek film there has ever been.
That's an interesting one of those points you made is really interesting about how when they question the underlying kind of principles of the Federation, that makes for really good Star Trek episodes. You mentioned earlier, Ed, about A Measure of a Man being a great Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
The one where Data is put on trial. And there's another wonderful episode of a similar kind of, I think it's set in the same room, called The Drumhead, where they have a guy on trial and it's kind of like a witch hunt. And they're both brilliant episodes where, you know, you kind of, you realise actually the Federation isn't perfect and there's still these other problems.
But it always gives you this thing of like, the Federation's not perfect, but the reason that everyone in the Federation carries out things like the Prime Directive and those philosophies so without thinking. Nobody ever questions it like on board a ship. They just sort of do. And the reason is that they trust like the workings of it. So like those episodes hammer that out.
And that's great, and the Prime Directive is fab, with one exception, and is it the Omega Protocol?
The Omega Directive.
The Omega Directive.
Which overwrites the Prime Directive.
So there's this, I don't know, this God particle.
Cool, yeah, the Omega particle.
And there was... yes, there was a... there was an explosion. Someone discovered this Omega particle. It exploded and just wrecked interstellar travel in this section.
Yeah, it destroys subspace. So yeah. They decided that if you ever detected an Omega particle, the Prime Directive is overwritten and you are tasked to destroy it at any cost.
Which essentially means if you're kind of a pre-warp civilization and you're fucking about with this particle, you could get invaded.
Yeah.
Just, and all of a sudden kind of placing the Federation as the bad guys. Now, they didn't...
That's clever.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, they never played it that way because I think the world they kind of invaded was looking at it had recently perished. Was it that one?
No, so the world that had worked on it, they were running out of resources and it was their last...
That was it.
...kind of ditch
it was their last
effort to try and generate power to keep their civilization going.
That's so good because no one's in the wrong there, really. Yeah. That's what makes the...
Yeah, it's like, obviously, you don't want this civilization to die out, but then also... If anything happened, it would destroy subspace throughout the quadrant and no one would ever be able to go to warp again.
Mm.
Mm. So it's an interesting one that doesn't always paint the Federation in the most positive light because, kind of, you know, does the end justify the means? You know, do we have to quash this magic particle?
But I think there the important part is that the viewer understands the working. Like, there's only a couple of times when the Federation's been painted as bad and the viewer doesn't understand the working. Like, sort of... The one at the end of TNG Season 1 where everyone's worm people, that's one. The conspiracy... This is called conspiracy, isn't it? And then that's when, like... A certain section of the Federation's high command has basically just been taken over by these parasites, and therefore they become closed off And it shows the sort of like the danger of bureaucracy when people can, if they change their minds on something, become dangerous because they can insulate themselves from questions. Then there's other episodes where like people in power decide that, you know, they have a better take than the Federation's underlying fundamental principles, and they usually end up being bad guys.
There's the kind of the, they explore some of that in some of the DS9 episodes around Section 31,
which is excellent.
There a couple of really good ones. So there's just like this mysterious guy rocks up, helpfully wearing all black, and just steals either Bashir or O'Brien away, and then just makes them do clandestine things on behalf of the Federation. At the end, it's always left fairly ambiguous to whether or not Section 31 is a real thing.
Oh, it is. It's made fairly obvious by the end that Section 31 really does exist.
Mm. But you kind of get the sense that they've almost got carte blanche to do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, because the Section 31 of the Starfleet Charter allows for basically exceptional actions to be taken under times of duress.
Mm.
And they've taken that as basically being, they're always threats to the Federation, so we can do what we want whenever we want.
Mm. So it's like, but I think in general, in what you're looking at with the Federation is a utopian society.
Mm,
So you're looking at that because the majority of system of citizens, almost all citizens, not just the ones we see in what is a kind of quasi-military organization, even though it's not a military organization, it's like a naval, it's an evolution of the Navy. Most citizens have faith that the overarching governmental system is right times.
And they've kind of... so there's no money?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of resource...
They're post-scarcity. There's trade, but there's no money. It's really strange.
Unless you're Ferengi.
There is Federation credits, which the Federation uses for trading with people outside of the Federation.
Mm.
So there's no money within the Federation, but the Federation does have money that it uses to trade with, like the Ferengi or other people.
Yeah. It's like Encounter at Farpoint, like when they go down onto the planet, and then she's like, I want all that fabric that you've magicked up. I'll charge it to my tab on the Enterprise, and it's just like, well.
So there is an economy. It's just with other.
Yeah, it's just outside of.
It's a larger stock market than like within a certain.
Basically, it's like there is money, there is economy, but the barrier is the kind of crash mat is so high for everyone that it's not just base needs that are taken care of, like housing and health and food and water and all that stuff. Mm. It's travel and movement around various Federation systems. It's like luxury items, it's hobbies and recreation. Everything is taken care of within Federation space.
Because there's the whole thing of it being I think it was on the Wisecrack edition, talks about philosophy in Star Trek and how it's a utilitarian organisation as well.
Yeah.
And like the pros and cons of that kind of society, living under a sort of for the many, not the few kind of deal. And like, because in some ways it's a utopia. I mean, it's good for everything, but in other ways it's not. It's like it's a weird one because once I started looking into it, I was like, oh mate, like how would this thing work? And it maybe just my sort of contemporary mind can't fathom it without money.
I think the idea is that post-scarcity, you don't have to worry about it. So, like, post-scarcity, like, we as a society have certain provisions for people, no matter who they are. So, like, at the moment, we have an NHS. People don't have to pay for that. People don't have to pay to see a doctor and such. At the moment, like, there are provisions for people to have housing. They're not adequate enough, but the idea is in a post-scarcity environment where you can just have blank matter and then just fabricate it into fucking anything you want. You can... you're not worried. And when you've kind of... You have the ability to just fabricate things like food, you don't have to worry about whether or not the state can account for those things. And people, it also makes the kind of case that even when everyone is not hungry, people still want to learn the thing that they want to do the thing that in their life. Like they want to keep making art, science, and all that stuff. Even though they don't have to eat, which is okay. If you're Ayn Rand, maybe that's a dubious topic. But like I'm pretty sure it still works.
That's the thing I was just about to say. If being a randy boy, like I am, that's what we call ourselves.
Both of you.
Yeah. Me and the other bloke.
You and Keith.
Yeah, me and Keith, the randy boys.
The randy boys, yeah.
I'm not even a fan of Ayn Rand.
I don't think she's got that many having watched the news, yes, she does.
Yeah, she's got quite a lot of fans. But then, like with the whole thing of replicators, I'm just like, if that existed, there would be someone in control of how many replicators were made and how much they processed.
Well,
because that's exactly how.
But when there's the idea
right
is,
now.
Yeah, but the idea of a state that's big enough to control that is that when you have like elected a system of government which is fair. Where the people who are in control of how many replicators are available are themselves beholden to the people who elected them. Like, in a democracy that works, or in a system of government that works, where people are beholden to the people that they are supposed to make decisions for, then, like, that's not a problem. The only reason that sort of, like, you end up with these dystopian things is when the route goes that no one takes control. And no, the people who are in control are never made beholden to the people that they have control over.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there is no... It's not like a trust thing. The thing... What we do with governments is we put them in power and then we trust them to make the decisions for us. And when they don't do that, when they're shown not to do that, the idea is that we get rid of them and we move on to someone who... is trustworthy to do that thing. And my phone's going off.
Shocking.
So we bring someone into the fray that who is trustworthy to do that thing. In dystopian, in Blade Runner and stuff like that, you end up with a system where people who had the resources were never made accountable for that. And therefore are able to cement themselves into a system of government that isn't right. A system of government is never found that makes people who make decisions on top accountable to the people who they make decisions over. Meaning that, like, yes, and those two futures are almost equally viable, right? Like,
the thing with Blade Runner is, the society in which Blade Runner is set, it feels not like a dystopian where a government has taken power as such. It feels like just a forgotten world. That's the impression I get.
Well, I don't think there is a government in Blade Runner.
No, it's all corporation.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Again, that's
no government is the worst form of government.
Yeah, but again, yeah, the Earth in Blade Runner feels like it. Anyway, we've got onto Blade Runner somehow again. I think
I was using it. It's my fault. I was using it as an example of dystopia.
I think it's a rule in Life's a Pitch. If we get onto Blade Runner.
It's time to stop.
It's time. It's like Hitler in an argument online.
It's Goodwin's law.
Yeah.
It's Deckard's law.
Yeah. Deckard's law. Hello, just want to say thank you for listening to the Life's a Pitch deleted scenes.
We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, maybe consider sharing it with your friends on social media, by word of mouth, anywhere really, maybe put it onto a thumb drive and just throw it at someone, and maybe even reviewing it on wherever you got it. If you find it somewhere on iTunes or Acast or wherever, maybe review it there. 5 stars, thumbs up, give everyone the heads up.
Like I said before, thank you. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.